Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Chumalo. And once again, we are bringing some of the top thought leaders in the fundraising industry to you as a service to help bring you ideas, to be a better communicator, more effective fundraiser, and to enjoy this wonderful work that we get to do. We are at the time of this recording in the midst of COVID-19. So everybody's always asking, whatever the topic is, it always seems to come back to COVID-19. And how do we do anything in this new environment, this new reality? And I am convinced that even before COVID-19, that donors are more and more distracted. We have, as fundraisers, more and more competition. We have competition from all these other charities out there that are vying for the same limited charitable dollars that our donors have and want to give. And COVID-19 has become another form of competition or distraction. And I am convinced also that more than ever, we need to be very, very clear on our messaging. And it's something that people take for granted. A lot of the messaging that I work with clients is one-on-one with fundraisers around getting donors' attention and getting them to call you back and getting the visits and having major and gift planning conversations, right? And one of the things I talk about a lot is clarity. There's a guy that I followed for a while, Pastor Andy Stanley. He's a pastor, but he's an author and speaker as well. I saw him speak a couple of years ago, and it was on clarity. And he said that people respect integrity, but they follow clarity. And it's a message that really hit home with me that I share with clients, people that will listen. The more clear we can be in our messaging, the more we're going to connect with people. I know it's common sense, but I don't think it's common practice. So today we have a guest who is an expert in storytelling. And when I hear the word storytelling, I think, oh, okay. You know, we think back to being a kid and your parents telling you a story at bedtime. Or I think of stories in a magazine or something, all of which is important. But after talking with our guest this morning, Sue Kindred, welcome, Sue.
Thank you.
I realized that it is about clarity, I think. And Sue, you'll correct me if I am misguided here. It's about clarity. It's about messaging. And again, how do we cut through the clutter? How do we get our donors' attention? And if we're not clear, and just like not only as fundraisers, as business owners, right? Always looking at my messaging. And is it clear? Does it quickly tell people what's the problem? How do we fix it? And what happens when we fix it, as an example? So the term storytelling means a lot of things. And Sue, thank you for doing this. And maybe that's a good place to start is just, can you give us some sense of what are the different types of storytelling? What does that mean?
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate being here today. So let's start about what is storytelling. So I always want to try and share with people that message is what you are delivering through the story, right? So people ask me a lot, so shouldn't my board all be telling the same story? And the answer to that is no. They should be telling the same message, but storytelling is the delivery mechanism. So why is story so important? Our brains are hardwired to process narrative and information through a storytelling format, right? When we hear language, we hear a story, it hits our amygdala, which is the center part of our brain, and it is processed there through an emotional context before we ever codify it with language. And we use that process to inform ourselves of how we're feeling and what we believe. So for an organization to get their message across, you're exactly right. Clarity is so important, but it's clarity about the belief systems that you are trying to get across, right? So it connects to your core belief systems. That is your message. We believe that the work that we do adds value to your world. And we're using a story framework to get that message across, to land in the brain of the person we're telling the story to.
Cool. So the story is the what's that term? It's the vehicle.
It's the delivery mechanism for your message. So, you know, as an example, you and I have talked recently about the concept of understanding the belief systems of an organization, right? And then you take those belief systems and you codify them in the story. And the story has a very specific construct. You know this from the work that you're doing with donors, right? Your message has to be about one person. You have to hone in on the fact that someone does not feel like they can be part of a solution. It's a solution is so grandiose that they can't feel like they're a part of it. So you hone your message down into the singular versus the masses. Mother Teresa said, if I think of the masses, I will never act, but if I think of the one, I will. And nice. When you build that into your story, that's going to help resonate with your prospective donor, because that's really what we're talking about here, is how do we continue the relationship with the donors that we have, and how do we draw in new donors to help fund our passion, right? That's why all of us are here, and that's why we're listening to this podcast today.
Yeah.
Is how do we connect that? So you talked about clarity, but I'd like to say there's a couple of other things that are just as important, and that is authenticity and the building of trust. And that's where story comes in, because we, again, are hardwired to trust someone who tells us a story. We believe people who tell us stories, and that believability connects to the authenticity. There's another part of that too, and that's the reciprocity between the fundraiser, if you will, the storyteller, if you will, and the person who's the prospect or the existing donor. And that is the building of the relationship. And again, storytelling is that foundational piece. You and I did that before we got started on this podcast this morning. We told each other stories, and it created this sense of trust, this sense of authenticity, this sense of reliability, that we can believe in what each other has to say and how that comes across. And so that creates that connection with the donor that you already know and the prospective donor, and how that folds into your message. It's reciprocity at its finest.
And I'm really big on preaching, going below, for donors that are willing to do this, go below the intellectual conversation, right? That for us to give away our hard-earned money, is that logical? To just give somebody, right? It's not logical, it's emotional. And I see with so many gift officers, I mean, I always preface these types of comments by saying everybody's really hardworking and under a lot of pressure. Sure. With limited resources, bringing a lot of money in the door.
Yeah.
And as a plan giving person, I'm used to long donor cycle, sure, having long conversations, more emotional, less transactional conversations. At the same time, I have seen with the donors that we can get below the surface. It's like one of my workshops, I had to put in that picture of the iceberg. I mean, how many PowerPoints have you seen with that picture of an iceberg in it, right? So at the tip, you have the iceberg, which is small, and then underneath the water, you can see that
it's everything right? Is under the water.
So I look at it as trite and overused as that iceberg image is. I look at that in conversations, and not just in our work, but just casually, whatever, meeting somebody on the street at the dog park or wherever, at a party. So much of it, the conversations people have around politics, around the weather, and that's fine, but mm-hmm. Can we get below it with people that are comfortable doing that, right? Because I had to learn not everybody wants to go there, even in a personal way, even friends or parties.
Sure.
But to take it below that surface, which is where all the magic happens.
So I have a great icebreaker question for that. That is when I meet somebody that I don't know, or that I know very casually, one of the questions that I really love to ask is, what's the most amazing thing that's happened to you this week?
Wow.
And it takes you away from the politics. It takes you away from the weather. They really, it takes a moment, because they will I don't know. And I'll think about it for a minute. And then the conversation really gets started. It is such a great way to immediately crack through that ice and connect with that other person on a more personal level. And we talked earlier about authenticity and trust. When you share your vulnerability, and that is exactly the way you do that, is that you connect immediately with the other person, and then you identify with that person, and you share your own vulnerability, it just continues to augment that authenticity and that trust.
I love that question, and we could just come up with, three to five versions of that question, right? What's the most exciting thing about our work?
Exactly.
Right, and for you.
Yeah, when I talk with people who are professional fundraisers, we talk about how you make that connection with your donor, your prospective donor. And that comes down again to the relationship that you have with them. It comes down to a big part of storytelling that people miss is the listening part of it. So the story that you're going to tell is the story that your donor wants to hear. What aspect of the work does he have an engagement with? So one of the perfect questions that I think that you could ask is, what about our work excites you? What is it that drew you to our organization in the first place? What kind of connection do you have? What is it about your philanthropic drive that allows you to be connected with us? And that creates that reciprocity that is so critical to building that strong relationship. The prospective donor has needs that need to be met. You know, a lot of organizations think very singularly about the work that they do. We're an organization, we need money in, our donors are ATM machines, we're gonna go get that money and do whatever it takes. But if you build a longer term relationship with that donor, they're gonna step in surprising ways. Because their need is to be valued, their need is to be appreciated, and their need is to showcase their philanthropic belief systems in a tangible way.
You said some, did you want to say something else? About
no,
that?
No, go ahead.
You said something in that, Sue, that triggered a thought around, again, everybody's hardworking and well-intentioned and under pressure, and that pressure tends to drive us to be more cookie cutter. Like, we have our message, our agenda, mm-hmm. and it's not extreme. Like, an extreme example, one I'm going through right now, I won't name the company, but I'm trying to get a new battery for my laptop. Seems like a pretty simple thing to do with a very reputable, long-standing computer company. I won't say the name, but it rhymes with smell. And I still don't have it resolved. And when you call, this is an extreme example, it is clear that the customer service people have
a script.
And it's like, no. So you're calling about a software issue. No. I'm very polite, of course. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's the battery. You're having a problem with the battery. You have a PC. It's a laptop, right? So it's like, that's an extreme example, but they're so scripted and it never gets to my agenda. Can I just have a battery, please?
Yeah, and you're beating the phone against the table to try and get an answer to what you need because they're not listening. And I think, again, I'm going to go with what you said, and everybody's so hardworking and everybody has got so much on their plate. I think of executive directors and gift officers and fund development officers as having, as playing this robust game of nonprofit whack-a-mole, right? So whatever comes up on their desk, they hit with a hammer till it goes away. And then they go on to the next one, right? Because there's so much to do. It is like the guy, this is an old reference, but the guy with the spinning plates, right? Mm. There's so much that needs to happen that it's hard to take a moment, take a deep breath, and focus on a different perspective. You know, an example that I sometimes use about storytelling versus story listening is a community garden that I was working with, okay? So their focus was all over the place. They were feeding people, they were growing things, they were helping young people understand about where food actually comes from. They were addressing you know, hunger issues, which I think they're now calling food insecurity, which makes me crazy. And
why does that make you crazy?
Well, because I understand it as a concept, but it's jargon, right? I still have an adoption client, and the executive director, when we first met, kept talking about trauma-informed parenting. And I'm like, nobody outside a social worker knows what that is. So stop using it unless you're talking to another social worker, right? So that we have this tendency to use the language of our own profession. And so, you know, food insecurity is a food distribution and a food procurement jargon. So, but back to this garden, there's all these pieces. They might be talking about food deserts and food insecurity and how do you feed people and getting people to understand where the food comes from. And that talks about, you know, the environment. So there's all these pieces. And a prospective donor might only have an interest in one of those pieces. But if you continue to hammer them with a message that's not their own connection, you're missing the opportunity to let them shine. So if you have this conversation with them, what is it that drew you to our work? What is it about our work that excites you? And they tell you that they are really excited about your work in food deserts, and you continue to talk to them about the environment, there's a disconnect there, and that's not going to continue to produce any kind of meaningful relationship.
So it's storytelling and story discovery.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree 100%.
With the donor. When I got in the business 15 years ago, mm-hmm. I met a woman who is a former Claire Meyerhoff, is a former reporter for, and she worked for CNN, NPR, some pretty big shop. It was so simple, but I remember it. She's like, everybody has a story. And part of your job as a fundraiser is to find people's story. Again, it's common sense, but I don't think it's common practice.
Well, and I think what you said earlier is really so true. People think of storytelling as frou-frou, right? Like an add-on. It's not the core. It's not the core work of what we're doing. And I would beg to differ. I would say it is the core work of what you're doing. Everything else piles onto that. Everything else attaches itself to that. Remember when we were talking earlier, I was telling you the story of an organization here in town that had hired me to do work on storytelling, but they hadn't done any of the foundational work that needed to be done for their board and their key stakeholders to really understand what they believed and understand how to share their mission and their passion with others. When I first met the executive director at an event, she said, I was introduced to someone who could help them with storytelling. And she goes, oh, I've been meaning to think about that. That is exactly the concept that most people have about storytelling. I've been meaning to think about that. She hired me. We got in. We did our work together. And it totally transformed the organization's fundraising capabilities and the engagement of their board. They suddenly had a very engaged and active board of some really all local but high-level businessmen in this community that were now suddenly super passionate about their work. Nice. And they'd been meaning to think about it.
COVID-19, as we mentioned early on, is certainly a part of, like I said, everyone's thinking. And can you talk a little bit about storytelling messaging in a pandemic?
Absolutely. So I've had nonprofits reach out to me and ask the question, what should we be talking about? You know, should we even be asking for money at this time? And my answer to that is absolutely. If your mission was valuable to your organization last February, it's still valuable to your donors, right? The work that you are doing. I think the story that you share is one that is excruciatingly honest, not prevaricating. I think that too many times we want to be seen in the best possible light, right? And I think that it is important to say we've had to pivot. We've had to put people on furlough. We have had to close our doors several days of the week. You know, now that we're, most states are kind of in a space where they're reopening some, like our museums here in town, instead of being open all the time, are open 3 days a week. So those are the kinds of stories that you tell your prospective donors, but you first have to ask them how COVID-19 is impacting them. I just wrote a blog post about, which you can find on my website, about connecting with your donors just to reach out and see how they're doing. That's part of the story. That is part of that connection that you have. And I don't think it does anybody any good to prevaricate in this environment that we're in. But I also don't think that it does anybody any good to raise the fire alarm. I know there was an organization out of New York that within days of the shutdown, they had sent out a notification to all of their stakeholders that said, fire, 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 we're going to die, we're going to die, you know. And while it raised a little bit of money, it was off-putting for a lot of people because it didn't connect with them on an emotional level.
And so is that a question of, well, in that messaging, is that similar to, well, it has to be. So a phone call versus a email or, right, or blast email. In a phone call, we start with, how are you doing? How are you managing with everything?
Right, right.
Making a connection is about you. It's not just about my agenda.
Exactly. And but then you have to ask those powerful questions that we talked about earlier, because the question, hi, how are you, gets a standard response. You have to ask a question that doesn't elicit a standard response. I'm fine, how are you, doesn't get you anywhere. It does not move the needle in any meaningful way. So, but if you ask, you know, how has this impacted you? How has being on lockdown impacted you? How has it impacted your family? I'm curious, do you need anything? Is there anything that we can do for you that would be helpful to you for your situation, right? We've been working on putting online programming together, and we've been looking at doing virtual tours, or we've been looking at creating these other things. Has any of that been helpful to you? Or are there any other ideas that you might have on ways that we could continue to provide value for our patrons, our stakeholders? Those kinds of questions elicit a deeper response.
So we can do that in the written word as well.
Absolutely.
To your point,
absolutely,
about not fire, 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 we're going to shut the doors, but have more empathy for the reader.
Absolutely. During this time, we know we've all been impacted. We all know that, for example, our neighbors are being laid off. They're without food. They're without, you know, a consistent source of income. We know people have had to pivot to put their lives on hold. They've had to, they're suddenly finding themselves, everybody in the family is working from home, and now they're trying to homeschool their kids. They don't have the necessary resources. We can't come in. There's an organization here in town that is an adult literacy program. They can't be back in that space. And if you are an adult who struggles with literacy, you're going to be an adult that struggles to help your children. So there are all kinds of ways to position your message in a way that is respectful of the way that your stakeholders are navigating this crisis.
Good stuff. What do you think about, well, I mentioned it, story discovery, finding the story. I'll give you an example. I think it's a skill set that we need to continually develop, is being really good at finding the story. So when we were flying back in the days, when we used to take airplanes,
right,
and I would park at a airport parking place that where you would, they would take you over in your car. So you go to the airport parking place, the driver gets in the car, takes you over, and then when you come back from your trip, they actually bring the car to the airport, and you can just leave from there. Pretty cool. So from that airport parking place to the airport, Philadelphia Airport, maybe was a 5-6 minute ride. So I'm an extrovert. I like to talk to people and meet people and hear their story. But I figured, you know, this would be a great exercise. I have 6 minutes to find the story in this driver. And so I like the timing of it. And There were times, and every time I wound up getting out of the car, bonding with the driver,
sure,
then being incredibly thankful for the conversation and finding a story, even with the person that might say, well, I worked for PICO, our utility company, for 40 years. And it's like, oh, wow, what's the story in that, right? Not, it's not like, oh, I was a firefighter, right? There's a lot of stories here.
Right.
Finding it in the person that just had a quote, normal job in life. And so it was just a cool little thing to do to make me aware of and to continually develop. How can I quickly find the story in this person in 5 minutes?
So I think that speaks to what you were talking about earlier, and that's that story discovery. And it speaks to what I was talking about earlier, and that's asking the right questions, right? We all need to have a host of questions that we can ask that also allow us to share a bit about ourselves with the person that we're talking to. Because once you crack open that vulnerability that I was talking about earlier, and that's really just about sharing a bit about yourself. Oh, you know what? I was with a company for 15 years, speaking to your guy who was with a company for 40, right? I was with a company for 15 years. It seemed like a really long time to me. Did your 40 years seem like a long time to you? Or did it go by and you just suddenly found yourself 40 years later and now you've got something new that you want to do? Those are the kinds of, that's the kind of dialogue that you can have, and it lets you in their world. And the same thing with your prospective donors, you know, share a little bit about yourself, share a little bit about you personally, not that the relationship is with you, not with the organization. You turn that into a relationship with the organization by virtue of the relationship with you.
Boy, what you did that last 2 minutes was gold. Not that everything else was crap, but you said something, Sue, that I've been working on lately. I read it somewhere. It might have been a book, The Lost Art of Compassion. It's a really interesting book, and I use it as a reference book. There's a great book on grieving and you know, loss of a loved one. I remember reading that chapter over and over and over again when a family member passed away. And I think it was in that book, they said, when someone else, like let's say my neighbor's sister just passed away suddenly a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm so sorry to hear that. Please know you're in my prayers. Because I learned that there's nothing I can say. And if I try to say something to comfort her, it's going to sound stupid. So I'm not even going to do that other than to say, I'm sorry, you're in my prayers. Please let me know. There's something, she had to go to Chicago. Can I help around the house or while you're away, whatever it is. But there was a tendency, an old habit to say, oh, I lost my sister to cancer too. But that, and what I learned in the book is that takes away from her and what she's going through. But what you just did was I can say that, but bring it right back to her.
Absolutely.
That's a huge point, Sue, I think. Right? Yeah. And that's the difference is, yes, you can say, this happened to me as well, but that you brought it right back to that person with a question, right?
Yes.
So in that case, I could have said, you know, sorry, how can I help? I lost my sister to cancer as well. And then a question, what would be a good question to come back to make it turn it back to her?
So you could say something like, I know that this is a really difficult time for you and that you're being hit with a lot of different things, but is there something that you can hone in on that you need right now? There was an article that I read a long time ago around that very thing. And the person offered, he said, we know that you're going to need to get dressed up. So I'm going to come and polish all your shoes. Right? It was so unexpected, right? And I, you know, the little boy's tennis shoes, they needed to be cleaned up. The dad's shoes needed to be polished. We know that you're going to have to be out of the house. So I'd like to come and take care of your cats. You make a specific offer to them that lets them immediately know that you understand that this is a time when they don't know how to put language to what they need. Mm. So you can do that for them.
Nice.
And the same holds true for in that nonprofit space that says, we know that, you know, now is a really difficult time for you to be sequestered and you're afraid to go to the grocery store or you're afraid to come get in line for food or you're afraid to, you know, any of these things, but we've created some online programming, or we have this opportunity that we can share with you. Would that be helpful?
So my takeaway in that whole conversation we just had is it's okay if there's generally something that I can share to help them understand that I had had a similar experience, but again, bring it right back to them.
Bring it right back to them. Absolutely.
It's not about us.
That's right.
I see inexperienced fundraisers that are not trained, not their fault, but their leadership doesn't spend the money on training, who will just talk about themselves and not bring it back to the donor. That's the key difference. It's okay to mention, like you said, I'll say it one more time, but just to reinforce it. It's okay to share a little bit about you that could relate to what the donor just said, but always bring it right back to them.
Exactly. I think that 360 connection is really important. But I think it's also important by sharing a little bit about yourself, you are creating, you are, again, cracking open that external shell to show just a little bit of your soft underbelly there that says, I have compassion, I have empathy, I have an understanding of what it's like to be in this situation. What you can't say is, I know what you're going through. You can't possibly know, you can't possibly say that. But what you can say is, I know how difficult the situation is because I've been there.
How'd you get so smart? So how'd you learn all this stuff?
I'm old.
What's your background? What did you study?
My undergraduate degree was in marketing and telecommunications, which back then was broadcast journalism. I was going to go be a reporter, right? So part of that whole reporting journalism marketing background is about gathering information and about stories and what stories can do for us and what they can't, and how to take that message and get it out in the world. And then right out of college, I went into the nonprofit sector, and I worked in the nonprofit sector for a couple of decades. And then a bunch of stuff happened. I tell people that my son showed no signs of leaving home, so I did. So I lived 40 years in Dallas, Texas, and I sold my house and put my two dogs and everything but my teenage son in the car. He was 20. I say teenage, he was 20. And everything in the car, and I moved to Richmond, Virginia, and started over. And
wow, completely over. With a business and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I found a traditional job here again in the sector. And then that was like not working for me. So then I started consulting.
And what year was that? So
I started consulting. So I guess I'm going into my eighth year of consulting.
And the company is S as in Sue, K as in Kindred Consulting.
That is correct.
And the web address is, let's do some plugs. Web address.
Yeah. SueKindred.com.
Sue
like
Kindred.
My name. Yeah. Pretty easy.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, so I have a lot of online trainings on there that I do. So I do a lot of training for our local community foundation, and I'll go into an organization and teach a lot of different kinds of training, including strategic planning, board development, storytelling.
And you obviously can do it anywhere now. I mean, right? With
oh my gosh, yes, it's so easy. It's so easy. We could before. In person is always better. It always has been. But certainly, we can do any kind of a Zoom training, or I can do. I have a number of clients outside the Virginia Mid-Atlantic region that I can work with remotely. Absolutely.
And when you say online training, is it only as a group, or do you also do if I want to take if me personally, Joe Tumalo, and I want to pay you with my personal Visa card, can I? Do you have that kind of training as well?
If your Visa card has a high enough limit on it, you absolutely can. But for the most part, it is a group organizational training. It is designed for an organization or a group of people that come together in a community. So if I've had where two or three small organizations that work in similar spaces come together and pool their resources to build that training.
Beautiful. So, and what else? Anything else you want to plug before we wrap up? Any books or anything?
No. Check out my website for my blog posts. Mm-hmm. And I hope to see you again and see everybody on the trail at some point. Stay safe and appropriately socially distanced, wear a mask.
Yeah. Thank you. And so what are some takeaways? I took some notes as we were chatting. I'll throw some out there. Storytelling versus messaging.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That the story is the delivery mechanism.
Yes.
Did I say that right? Yeah.
Yes. Yep. It is a delivery mechanism for your message. Another takeaway is storytelling is the foundational work for authenticity and trust. Everybody, no matter what they are doing, is working in the space of building a better community. And to build a better community, we have to be connected. And the way we connect with one another is through stories.
Beautifully, beautifully said. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me today, Joe.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.